Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to new episodes of the Reimagine Schools podcast for the 2023-24 school year. I'm your host, Dr. Greg Goins, and I'm excited to bring you new conversations this school year with many of the top authors, speakers, and thought leaders in P-12 education. Once again, Rocket PD will serve as the official sponsor of the Reimagine Schools podcast. So if you're looking for the very best and professional development for educators, look no further than rocketpd.com. Also thrilled to announce my continued partnership with the Education Podcast Network, in which I am a proud member. If you're looking for other education podcasts, you certainly want to visit our website at edupodcastnetwork.com. And finally, folks, as we bring in guests each week to have conversations about how to reimagine schools, I encourage you to look at the show notes with each episode. That's where I'll have links for our guests through their social media websites. You might even find the occasional link to go to the bookstore and buy one of their books, as we're going to have a lot of prominent authors and speakers scheduled for this school year. So with that, folks, very excited to get ready to rock and roll for this new school year. As always, hit me up if you have questions or comments, or if you just want to talk more about what guests you want to see in the future on the Reimagine Schools podcast, because we're about to rock and roll. The Reimagine Schools podcast begins right now.
I'm Chris Nessie, host of Behind the Mic, Voices of the EPN, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hello again, everyone. We are back in the saddle once again with another episode of the Reimagine Schools podcast. Another great conversation today, as I had the chance to bring in the author of a great new book that I just finished. I can't recommend it enough. It's by David Jakes. The name of the book is The Design Thinking Classroom, Using Design Thinking to Reimagine the Role and Practice of Educators. And so this certainly fits in with the Reimagine Schools theme. A big welcome to David Jakes. How are you, David?
I'm doing fine. Thanks. Thanks much. Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been a big fan of your work for a long time, and I'm thrilled to finally get a chance to talk with you. You're a long time educator, classroom teacher, working in the technology space in schools, and then even being a school administrator before taking on this design work at DavidJakesDesign.com. So you can check that out. You can also follow David on, I guess we're calling it X now, at DJakes. A lot of great insight there into the design thinking process. If you were sitting in front of a room full of new teachers and someone asked you to explain the design thinking process in a very simple way, how would you answer that question?
That's a great question. So the design process in a very simple way is an approach based in, it's a human-centered approach. And that, you know, there's steps in the process. It's in a lot of ways, it's depicted as a sequential process. There are steps, but in practice, it's not. It wraps around itself and goes in different directions. The goal is really to involve yourself deeply in the lives of the people you're designing with. And I'm very specific about that. You know, in design, you co-design with people. You don't design for them, you design with them. So design is approach that, you know, and I in the book I address this, but you know, people say it's a problem solving approach. I like to frame it more of as a solution finding approach. So what design does is starts with the provocation, which is an authentic kind of challenge that human beings face. And there's a deep dive into understanding deeply about that particular issue or that need. And then there's something called a point of view that's developed, that is your perspective on their needs, and you check with them and you do a deep dive with them on that in terms of, did I get this right? And then it goes through a process of where you go through ideation and prototyping and come up with a potential solution or a product, whatever it might be. And that's testing. There's an iterative cycle. But at the end of the day, it is a process that's based in uniquely finding solutions to the needs of human beings. What the book does is makes the case for taking that process and using it as an instructional framework to engage kids differently in the process of school. So that's in a nutshell. It's everything that we use on a daily basis has been designed, some things better than others. So it is a process that is used throughout the world to create things of value for human beings. And that's what I would say.
Yeah. And we know that design thinking has been around for quite some time. It's been primarily used in the business sector. You know, you see a lot of Fortune 500 companies engaging in design thinking for strategic planning, those type of things. From my lens, it's only entered the education field maybe in the last, 8 to 10 years. Why do you think it took us so long to get there? And what do you think it is? You can go to like Stanford University and the D School, and they're doing all types of great things there. IDEO is doing some great things with design thinking, who I think you give credit in the book as one of the original founders of the design thinking process. Why are educators so late to get there?
That's another great question. And that's a question I think about all the time. And actually, I'm writing a blog post on that now. When you look at schools, the culture of school is, I think schools in a lot of ways are slow to make changes. They're not as responsive as I think sometimes they need to be. And using a design approach is a big shift away from what you might expect to, expect in a traditional education. So I think there's the book is focused on helping teachers make some easy steps into the design process and growing with the design process. But in terms of your question, there are places that have adopted this as you alluded to. There's numerous places. There's Crosstown in Memphis. There's the Museum School in Grand Rapids, plus others, a couple schools in Atlanta. So, I think it is when you have this really interesting approach that engages kids differently. When it butts up against the current culture and expert climate of education, it's a hard sell, to be honest with you. And it takes a while to learn design. It really does. There has to be a commitment to it. There's learning design, and I liken it to, and I mentioned this in the book, it's a lot like Photoshop. There's always more to learn. You can never always learn everything about Photoshop. It's the same about design. There's always ways to learn more and go in different directions and take the process in different ways. And so, I look at X or Twitter, whatever we call it, and I watch the opening of schools, and it's still the same kind of, even after the pandemic, we went right back to the traditional ways in which school takes place. And I think that's the challenge. I think it's also a leadership issue. What do we really want the experience to be in school? How does that experience become something that's relevant and authentic and meaningful for kids? And I'm not saying that the current iteration of school with all the things that make that up can't be that, because it can be. But it's just, it's the same thing. You can say project-based learning. That's a really interesting approach to instruction, to learning. That's still being addressed and trying to gain traction in education. So I think design, it just takes schools long. The culture is such that it takes a long time for things to take hold.
And, you and I talked a little bit before we came on air. One of the things we have in common is we're both big baseball fans. We're on opposite sides of the track in Chicago. I'm a Cub fan, and you root for the White Sox. But
you shouldn't have mentioned that.
What's that?
You shouldn't have mentioned that.
But the reason I mentioned that is, Bill Veeck, the great owner of the White Sox, is probably most well known for the quote, "I try not to break the rules, but merely to test their elasticity." But I think a bigger quote from Veeck is, "Tradition is the albatross around the neck of progress." You just talked about tradition. And the thing I really liked about your book and your approach to writing it is this: you really tried to help educators think in a non-traditional way. We have to get past, the teacher's desk in the front of the room, the straight rows of chairs, and that traditional mindset of what you know, teachers are taught in credential schools that we still see in far too many schools today.
Yeah, you know, you've got in schools, you've got, you know, you've got, there's a lot of, you know, when you look at schools, schools have been designed to make sense of a school day. What I mean by that is you've got the Carnegie, you know, the typical Carnegie bell schedule. You've got a bell schedule, okay, periods. You've got roles. You've got teacher, administrator, staff member, parapro, whatever. You've got ability levels. You've got grade levels. You've got lessons that build into units. Units build into course. I'm talking high school here. Units build into courses. Courses build into departments. Departments build into schools. And so, you know, schools are designed to be efficient and effective. When you've got 3,000 kids, 2,000 kids in a space, you have to have some ways to operate. And so there's been a lot of structures that have been put in place. You know, when you talk about structures, you can mention classrooms too. We all know what classrooms look like, right? One part of my design work that I do a lot of classroom redesign. And that is the hardest thing for me is to get people to reimagine that space in different ways, to see a different approach that can mean different things for the learning process. So we've got all these things that are in place. And going back to your other question about why is it, you know, slow on the uptake, is that the traditional elements that have been put in place in the schools that make sense of a school day, bell schedules, et cetera, what I mentioned, are the very things that get in the way of changing and improving schools. If you've ever tried to change, a 8-period bell schedule into a blast schedule, you know what I mean. So, you know, there's a lot of those cultural elements that schools are built upon are so embedded in the culture that they, when you're looking at a design approach, you're looking at a completely shift in the way in which we teach, the way in which spaces are used, the way in which curriculum is shaped and implemented. So, you know, I think there's these obstacles. And in fact, you know, I've moved away, to be honest with you, Greg, in my practice about talking with schools about change. And the reason for that is because in a lot of ways in education and other professions too, change says that translates into you're not doing something right. I think you got to change and do something different. And so I think a different kind of lens for that is looking at how, you know, when I go and work with school districts, I try and focus on advancing the educational experience they offer, build on the things that they're doing well, and where are these different inroads and different opportunities to start thinking differently about the way in which school takes place. So that's really the focus of my work.
And I think when I read the book, I knew we were kind of kindred spirits when you had a chapter about the evolving role of the classroom teacher. And I've been saying for a long time that teachers need to become designers. And if a teacher is still going to lecture in the front of the room for a 52-minute class period, you don't need to change the classroom the way it's looked the last 140 or so years. But if we're going to create those deeper learning experiences for kids and create room for collaboration, then the role of teacher has to change to one of designer so kids can take more ownership of their learning. So we could talk on that question all day long, but I really was fired up when I read that chapter.
Yeah, you know, I think teachers are natural designers. I mean, they do, you know, a lesson plan is a design, you know, it's an actual design. The book makes a case for expanding that role of teachers and using the design thinking process as part of an advanced way to design experiences. So, it's important to realize that, that lecture that you talked about can do good things and you can learn a lot from a lecture, but you can't lecture your kids all day, every day. And, you know, the big thing for me in schools, and I write about this, speak about this, and I think about it a lot of time is in 2023 and beyond, you're looking at a situation where I go to a space to learn. I'm told what to learn. I'm told by another person how I'm going to learn it. And I'm told by another person how I'm going to demonstrate my understanding of what's supposed to be learned. That becomes a real challenge when you think of school in that context, that how much does that resonate still with kids? And how much does that it probably hasn't for a long time. And that directive kind of, no one learns like that, except in schools. I mean, you don't need a school to learn. You certainly don't need a teacher to learn. And, you know, so that directive kind of experience where everything's defined for the learner is the key thing that has to be reshaped in terms of if we're going to look at advancing an experience that kids have in schools. And I'm not saying schools aren't of high value. We've learned that, you know, during the pandemic, of the value of schools and the role that schools play. And I often say this when I talk about classroom design is, you know, classrooms are the fundamental spatial unit of a school. We're not tearing down our schools anytime soon. We're not re-tearing down our classrooms anytime soon. But what classrooms are those places where kids that want to learn come in contact with the very people that are going to help them do that and are committed to do that. And that's really the magic of school, that interplay between, student and teacher. But that means that, you know, when we're looking at advancing that educational experience, there has to be a different role for teachers, one that's more focused on being a guide or a mentor, a connector, an orchestrator. And I'm not satisfied with teachers as facilitators. I don't like that. I've never have. I certainly don't like guiding, deciding, or that garbage. But I think facilitators is too weak of a word capture the elegance of what teachers do on a daily basis with 30 kids in their classroom that all have different lives at home, have different interests in the learning what the teachers are telling them about. And, you know, so it's really to get kids to learn is quite a magical kind of thing because of all the different variables that come into play. Facilitator doesn't quite capture that for me. So, you know, in the book, educator designer focuses on a completely different role. It's in, for example, connector. That's, you know, if I'm in a classroom and I'm using a design approach, I'm looking to extend the learning experience beyond the brick and mortar experience of the school out in the community. And my role is I'm going to connect kids and I'm going to teach kids how to connect with people beyond school so that we increase the level of engagement, we increase authenticity of the course of study. And we start bringing in additional expertise in the whole concept of what learning looks like. So I think part of embracing a design thinking approach means you have to be committed to accepting a new kind of role as a teacher.
Hey guys, Dr. G here. And I want to take a quick pause to announce that I'm now offering a 7-week online professional development opportunity for school leaders. And you can learn all about it at my new website at reimagineschoolsnow.com. You know, since 2018, I've been producing episodes of this Reimagine Schools podcast, and I've been so blessed to have many of the top authors, speakers, and thought leaders around the world in P-12 education. I've tried to bring those conversations into my college courses that I teach in educational leadership. If you've had a course with me, you know that we're always going to go through podcast PD, in which we're going to listen to episodes and we're going to have engaging conversation about how we can create better schools for kids. Now we're hoping to bring that to scale. Not only are my Reimagine Schools podcast episodes considered by me to be a living textbook, so we have real-time conversations about best practices in educational leadership. But now I want to expand and offer this to everyone that has an interest in taking advantage of this very unique PD opportunity. So if you have the courage, the drive, and the passion to lead change in your school, then you can go to the website and find more information. This is a 7-week online course, and it's in a mastermind format. So we will be meeting once a week during that 7-week time frame via Zoom, and you'll be interacting with other like-minded leaders. This is a cohort model, so district superintendents can enroll school district teams if you want to go through it together. Our individuals, of course, can sign up on the website and join other school leaders from across the country and form your own group of innovation to discuss best practices in education. The cost for the 7-week program is $299. So again, go to the website, check it out, reimagineschoolsnow.com. You can shoot me an email at drgreggoins@gmail.com if you have questions or need more information. If you're in Kentucky, this new course is now eligible for ELA credit, so you can get professional development credit for going through the 7-week course. So if you are ready to take the next step and go to the next level of leadership. Let's reimagine schools together. Visit that website, reimagineschoolsnow.com, to see the format and those things we're going to discuss along the way. And hit me up on social media or shoot me an email if you want to be a part of this new cohort experience to reimagine schools. You know, once we see the shift in the role of the classroom teacher, then obviously I would think the next big thing is the classroom environment itself needs to change. And so I know that's where your design work really, you know, pays big dividends. I had the pleasure of talking to Joe Erpelding, the original principal of the Design 39 campus in San Diego, which is one of the most innovative schools in the country. And I was amazed. I think just about every piece of furniture in those classrooms were, you know, you could flip them over and they become whiteboards, even the desk. And so you have all this collaborative space, but if the teacher needs to become a designer, then classrooms have to become design studios. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, as I mentioned, the classroom has, if I say classroom to people, and I actually do this exercise with teachers, I say, tell me about what a classroom is. And they'll immediately go into, you know, it's rows, it's a teacher desk, it's, you know, it's a front of the classroom. We've got a defined idea of what that classroom looks like. The interesting thing, to be honest with you, is sort of a tangent to that, is ask the same question to parents. And, you know, they will say the same thing. And, you know, I would challenge your listeners to watch for commercials on television that feature classrooms, because they're all pictured the same exact way. Everybody knows what a classroom looks like. You know, it's the rows of desks, and it's the whole shot. So, you know, when you say studio, it means something completely different to them. They'll talk about creativity, they'll talk about flexibility, agility, all those things that we want to see in space. So the caveat here is that you can expect to have a different kind of experience and reshape the educational experience of school, and expect a classroom that is designed in 1965 to accommodate that experience. So the first step in reshaping spaces or reshaping the experience is to think, how does the built environment or how does the physical space, and now the virtual space as well, contribute to the identity of a new kind of experience? And that requires, those both are great design questions. And so, you know, when you pose it as a design provocation to teachers, it can look in a completely, it looks different. I mean, there's certain elements that are the same across schools, but it can look different between, you know, the kind of schools and what the expectation is for learning. The key thing to understand about learning space design, it's not about furniture. You don't start with furniture. Don't start with technology. You don't start with things. So design of spaces is predicated on and demands that you clearly identify the expected student and teacher experience that you want to achieve. That's what you have to define. And I said student and teacher because a lot of times when school redesign happens, it's focused on the kids. And we have to be sure that we include teachers because teachers inhabit those spaces as well, right? But you have to answer that question first. And so that's the whole discovery approach that involves talking with teachers, administrators, kids, doing tours of spaces, going through workshops. But at the end of the day, you come up with a set of design drivers. Those design drivers are really the second part of the design process. And what they do is clearly articulate the student experience and teaching and learning experience you want to have. From there, you make a pivot into a spatial response that can manifest that experience. In a nutshell, that's how you change spaces. And the other thing, good thing to do is, and I do a lot of these, are learning spaces pilots. You know, when you're talking about a classroom redesign, a classroom today and post-pandemic is a $25,000 to $30,000 proposition. In schools, you know, you do that once in every 30, 35 years. So, you know, you better get it right if you're spending that kind of money. So the really interesting thing about spatial redesign is do a pilot program where you test the design of different spaces. And that's designed to help make decisions about furniture, but most importantly, it's about how can that new classroom space shift what occurs in the space and become a larger canvas for the design of experiences. New spaces in schools should be designed as a broader palette that educator designers can use to create experiences with. When I do a pre-survey before I go into school district, I always ask, how often do you think about the role of space in teaching and learning on a daily basis? And the outcome of that is, you know, it's never or rarely. And the reason for that is because it's not something that is the fault of a teacher, but when you've got steel frame desks that were made in 1970 that are arranged in rows, you can't do anything with that. They're too difficult to move and rearrange. So, you know, the space doesn't factor much into, you know, the design of what you want to call it a lesson. Compare that to the experiences beyond school, where space is a critical element of really everything that people do. Like, take a look at business, for example, take a look at third spaces like Starbucks, all those kinds of things, all those different spaces are designed to create a kind of experience that promotes a lot of different kinds of behaviors, creativity, innovative thought and practice and things like that. So we have to think differently about spaces and their role in the future of schools. Simple as that.
You know, one of the things I found fascinating in the book was you talked about whenever you go to a school the first time and tour the school space, you like to get multiple tours. You like to get one from maybe the principal or the teacher, and then you like to get one from kids. So this may be a difficult question to answer just kind of off the fly, but what's different? What do kids tell you that's maybe differently than the adults whenever they're giving those tours? Or what is the biggest difference between those tours?
Well, it's, you know, obviously the reason I do three tours is to have different lenses on spaces and perspectives. The other thing I also do is have each group take me to the space that's never on any tour. Although when I did that one time in the school, I ended up in a middle school crawl space of all places, which was pretty creepy. But, you know, I was doing a tour once. Well, I won't get in that because if I do that, that'll maybe identify the client. But kids are going to take you to places that resonate with them. And when I go to, you know, for example, when I go, when the kids will take, I go, take me to the space that most resonates with you. When we go there, they'll explain, I'll ask them why. And so that's an insight into their world in terms of what resonates, what connects them to that space, which can be replicated then. You know, for teachers, they immediately take you into the classrooms and they will show you, you know, the things that are good about classrooms, things that are bad. You know, administrators tend to give you a more holistic picture of things. Realistically, the tours are an opportunity for a conversation, you know, and it's to look at things and to see things and point out things that, you know, they see the spaces every single day and I don't. And so I notice things that they are sort of been just, they're immune to, they don't recognize it. So, and that's when I get to ask questions about why they're doing this and why they're doing that and what's the relationship of that to this, you know. And you see, you know, when you go to like a schools and that are part of a school district, you look for equality. In other words, you know, I go into visit a couple high schools, I'm looking for, does each school have the same types of spaces? And the reason for that is if you're doing professional development at a scale across the district and you're expecting spaces to support that professional development, every school better have some kind of space that supports that. So there's an equality of space. I also look at equity issues across the school district, and that's where tours come into play, where, you know, you're looking at, do professional educators, for example, so a special needs professional have adequate space? Are they working out of a closet in one school and another they have a much larger space? So there's different things and different metrics you look at it when you're doing a tour. You're looking at how schools use informal spaces, hallways, for example. I always look for how much furniture teachers have brought in from garage sales and IKEA and things like that, which is a big no-no. And so there's lots of things that I see, and it's just an opportunity to get different perspectives. They all will tell you different things that are germane to their particular role in the school. So it gives you a holistic approach. The hardest group to get in touch with, believe it or not, is kids. I always have a hard time. You know, schools will go, why do you want to talk to kids? Duh. You know, and so I got to fight for that sometimes.
You know, we've been having this conversation for a few years now, or at least I have, on this particular podcast, talking with different educators and thought leaders. And I don't know how this happened, but somewhere along the line, this idea of redesigning classrooms became all about flexible seating. Does that drive you crazy when that comes up over and over?
You see my reaction.
That can't be the only thing.
Well, there is nothing worse than that. That's been promoted, and that, you know, and I won't say where it's been promoted. There's been promoted everywhere, actually, but with that's become the vernacular of schools. And I've tried my best to, with my clients, to move them away from that. Flexible seating, it's not about where you sit. It's not about seating. It's not about the kid. It's flexible seating, about where I sit. How did we arrive at that? What it is about the redesign of a space for kids and for their learning. It's not about sitting anywhere. It's not about your choice of a chair or a beanbag. It's about the thoughtful design of a space to be created for the manifestation of the experience that the school wants, going back to my earlier point. Doesn't have anything to do with choice. You know, choice is a big part of that, but it's a, you know, do I want to stand? Do I want to sit? Do I want to use the floor? Do I want to work together? You know, the hardest thing in spatial design to get teachers to do is to grant agency to kids to make the space theirs. One of the things on my tours that I do is I step into class. I do a lot of different things on tours. I do a 5-minute classroom tour where I pop in and watch instruction for five, or classroom experience for 5 minutes, do that. But one of the things I look at is when I do tours is when I walk into a space, what does the invitation of the space say? Is the space about teachers, or is it about kids, or is it about both? And when I walk into a classroom, I look at the relationship of the amount of space that kids have to compare to the amount of space that teachers have. In some cases, you've got, you know, a typical classroom in high school is 800 square feet. That's a general size. And then you might have 30 kids. And in a lot of cases, those 30 kids are crammed into 50% of the space, and 50% of the space is assigned to teachers to walk around and lecture at. And, you know, and so this notion, this fixation on flexible seating provides a one-dimensional perspective on what's necessary and needed in classrooms. It's about seating. No, it's not. It's about an effective design that meets instructional and learning needs of the instructional needs of teachers and the learning needs of kids. So yeah, it's a bad, bad thing.
Well, I'm sorry to make your blood pressure go sky high today, but I think it was a great answer. And I think people need to have conversations about.
Yeah, please stop with the flexible seating. Jeez, come on.
Well, that's been a great conversation. I could talk with you all day. Again, big fan of the book. Guys, go out and get the book wherever books are sold. You can get it off of the website. And I'm sure you can. I think I got it off Amazon. So
yeah.
You can, you know, get the book, make it part of your professional library. And as we close, David, if a school district wants to work with David Jake's design, you know, how do they get a hold of you, and what's the process?
The best way to there's a contact form on my website. Just fill it out. I'll be back in touch within an hour. It's davidjakes.com, davidjakesdesigns.com/contact. But it's all over my website. Or you can email me directly. My email's on there as well.
Well, thanks for your time. Great job with the book. I hope we get to talk again soon.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I really sincerely appreciate it. And thanks.
So that's a wrap on this episode of the Reimagine Schools podcast. As always, a big thank you to everyone out there listening, sharing out episodes, and of course, creating your own podcast PD groups right there in your own school. I'm amazed how many of my former students and educators, not only here in Kentucky, but throughout the country, have listened to Lee's podcast, they've formed small groups together, and they've had discussion about how to create better schools for kids. And if you have a podcast group there in your school and you want me to jump into a Zoom meeting or maybe even attend in person to sit down and have a roundtable discussion with educators in your building, I would love to do that. So hit me up. You can find me on social media at Dr. Greg Goins. You can always email me at drgreggoins@gmail.com. And again, if you have questions about leadership coaching or some of the consulting work that I'm currently doing with the Modern Classrooms Project or Rocket PD, hit me up on social media or shoot me that email. I would love to talk with you and help create better schools for kids right there in your school and community. So with that, folks, that's a wrap on another episode. Always do what you can to create better schools for kids.